You're listening to Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill gaming podcast. Here's your host, John Wall.
It's November 6, 2025, and welcome to episode 157 of Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill video game podcast. I'm your host, John Wall, and I apologize if there's any noise in the background of this episode. All day there has been a chainsawing in the neighborhood. There's people cutting down trees and limbs and all that. And listen, this is a... Oh, you can hear it. Listen. Oh, that's annoying. and listen, this is a rinky-dink operation. I don't have any soundproof podcast studio or nothing, so I apologize. Bear with me. Every Thursday morning, I bring you 15 minutes of video game impressions, the latest industry news, and tales of a Gen X geek. Thank you so much for tuning into the show today. On this week's program, I'm going to be talking about Yuka Replay-ly. But first, we start the day by checking out some of the headlines from the past week. And this week, instead of grabbing the one usual news story, I think we need to have a talk. And we need to talk a little bit about Xbox. Xbox is having a really bad year. Ironically, it's not because of their games, because 2025 has been one of their best years for first-party releases in a really long time. But in just about every other imaginable way, it's been pretty brutal. In the last quarter, their hardware sales tanked, basically dropping by nearly 30%. But honestly, that's not much of a surprise. You know, we're 5 years into a generation where they've made all of their first-party games available on PC and many of them on PlayStation. By and large, the people who want an Xbox console, they've got one by now. And they've made up for that, you know, with the additional revenue from multi-platform releases. The real problems at Xbox have less to do with their game strategy and more to do with the decisions being made at the top. I mean, there's this whole Israel situation, which, you know, I've talked about before. There's an ongoing boycott of Xbox due to Microsoft providing the Israeli military with cloud services and other technology that's been used in their campaign of genocide against the Palestinians. This obviously isn't directly related to the Xbox division, but a boycott of Microsoft is a boycott of Xbox, so there's really no telling how much damage has been done, not just financially from canceled, you know, Game Pass subscriptions and game sales, but just people's opinion of the brand. And then there's the layoffs, nearly 9,000 people laid off from around the company, which led to the cancellation of multiple projects, including Perfect Dark and Everwild and multiple games that that they were publishing with outside developers like Contraband from Avalanche. And this also led to the closure of their Santa Monica-based team, The Initiative, which was working on Perfect Dark and closed their doors without ever having released a game. They've also raised prices on all of their hardware options across the board. And even worse, I think, they increased the price on Game Pass, with the ultimate option going up by a whopping 50% from $20 a month to $30. And that announcement led to lots of people I know canceling their subscriptions. And unless you're a person like me who plays a lot of the games that come out on that service, it's hard to blame anybody for deciding to drop it. That's a lot of money. And the reason for the layoffs and the price increases is reportedly because Microsoft has told Xbox that it needs to maintain a 30% profit margin, which is apparently much higher than the industry average and nearly double that of PlayStation's 16% margin for the first quarter of 2025. essentially one of the richest companies in the world is not happy and wants to make even more money. So where does that leave Xbox as we get ready for a new generation in just a couple years? For the first time in a very long time, the games aren't a problem. They have Call of Duty, Minecraft, Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Halo, Doom. They've got enough games to be really successful. I think it boils down to really two major problems. One, at a time when you no longer need an Xbox to play Xbox games, how do they create a piece of hardware that makes people want to buy it, you know, if they don't need it? They'll get people like me, you know, who prefer playing on Xbox and have large digital libraries, but is that enough for them? Would they be satisfied with that admittedly smaller sliver, slice of the pie? It sounds like their big bet will be trying to create a powerful console PC hybrid, which will play Xbox and Steam games, which sounds really cool. But if Microsoft is squeezing them to make more money, is anybody going to buy it if it costs $1,000 or more? And perhaps more importantly, how do they turn around the perception of Xbox, the reputation that it now has? I think when Spencer and company took over, people genuinely wanted them to turn things around. People were rooting for them to succeed. And now they are the company that can't even speak up when an evil police state that kidnaps people off the street uses Master Chief to promote their terror campaign. I mean, I honestly don't know how you turn around that kind of bad reputation. All right, so Yooka-Laylee is a 3D platformer that came out back in 2017, and it was the first game to be developed by then brand new studio Playtonic, and it released to somewhat, tepid reviews. Critics thought it was charming, but also that the gameplay felt a bit dated and uninteresting. And from what I remember from playing it back then, I think I felt about the same way. It wasn't bad, it wasn't amazing. It just kind of was. It sold well enough, though, to get a sequel a couple of years later, Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair, and now the first game is back with Yooka-Replay-Lee. Clever. Which falls kind of somewhere in between a remake and a remaster. In addition to the kind of improvements that you would expect from something like this, you know, like the improved visuals and resolution and all that, they've also improved on the original release by adding things like a world map to help you find your way around and get all the collectibles. There are new moves and enemies, new challenges and locations. It's really almost like a do-over. Like they said, what if we made this game today, how would we change what we did originally? And because of that, I think the game is a lot more fun than it was the first time around. It plays better, and it feels more complete. It feels better thought out. And I do think a lot of what is appealing to me about this game is that it is 100% unapologetically a Rare game. Playtonic was founded largely by ex-Rare employees, and it shows in every inch of this game, from the duo of Yooka, the chameleon, and Laylee, the bat, to the visual style, to the gibberish dialogue, and Grant Kirkhope's music. This game is the third Banjo-Kazooie game in everything but name. And if you like those kind of games, you know, the Spyros and Sackboys of the world, I think you'll probably dig what they're doing here. And I've had some good fun with it. The characters are silly. There's, you know, like I said, lots of collectibles to grab. The world is colorful. You know, it is that game. But in the words of the legendary Dennis Green, they are who we thought they were. Unfortunately, I think all the polish and additions and improvements, while they make the game better, it doesn't raise the game beyond what it was before, a B-level platformer. And I don't want that to sound too harsh, you know. There's room in the world for B-level games, because there's nothing inherently wrong with this, but there's something with all great platformers that I think it's hard to pin down, you know. Call it an X factor, or, you know, just a greater sense of imagination, whatever you want to call it. But when you play Super Mario Odyssey or Astro Bot, you just know there's something more there. Those games have that extra juice that brings it to the next level. And Yooka Replay-Lee is just good. It's a good platformer. And, you know, there aren't very many good 3D platformers coming out these days, so depending on your appetite for that, maybe that's enough. So the other day, I was at an appointment. I was on my way to an appointment, and I was really thirsty, and I thought about going through a Starbucks drive-thru, but I decided against it because the office where I was going to has a Keurig in the waiting room, and I usually have like a hot cocoa from there. So I'll just wait, and I'll do that. When I got to the appointment, though, there was a sign that said the Keurig was out of order. Well, farts. But, okay, this is a pretty big office building, so there must be a vending machine somewhere, right? So I went walking around, looking, and lo and behold, I found a little, like a lounge-type area with a vending machine. Now, I don't know how often you frequent vending machines, but they're pretty cut and dry. You put in your dollar bill, or maybe you use Apple Pay on your phone. You punch in the number, you know, 3L, whatever, and out shoots a Milky Way or whatever you're getting. But not this machine. Oh no, that would be way too damn easy. This machine had, first of all, it had a touchscreen with a little QR code above that said, "Scan here to begin." Okay, sure, let's do this. So I scan the code, and it wants me to download an app. Okay, that's kind of a pain in the butt, but I really wanted a Dr. Pepper, so whatever. The app downloads, and when I open it, it wants me to create an account. An account. I need to create an account so that I can get a Dr. Pepper. Okay, fine. Here's my name and my email address. And of course, they have to email me a code so that I can activate my soda account. So I leave the app and I go to my email and I get the code and I go back to the app and I enter the number. Beep, beep, beep. All right. Now I have created an account to purchase a soda. I click start now, and it wants me to add a location. Okay, so I go into my location settings and approve the Soda Pop app to know where I'm at, and it tells me that there is no location near me. Listen, I've come too far now to give up on this. I'm dying of thirst, and I don't want that Dr. Pepper anymore. I need that Dr. Pepper. So the other option is to enter my location manually, at which point it asks me for my location code. Location code. Okay. I search every inch of this damn vending machine, on the sides, behind it, above it, inside of it, all the signage around, and there is no location code listed anywhere. Nothing. So I haven't used the touchscreen yet, so I tap it, and it asks me for my account number. So I go back into the app, and I search everywhere, and there's no account number. There's no number to be found. And it is at this point that I reluctantly accept defeat. The robots have won. I am not meant to enjoy that ice-cold Frosty Dr. Pepper. It stared at me mockingly from behind the glass door. So I deleted the app. I walked out of the room and used the drinking fountain outside of the men's restroom. I really hate technology sometimes. Oh, thank you so much for listening to Midlife SideQuest. I appreciate you making time in your day to hang out with me. You can catch new episodes of the show every Thursday morning wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can support the show by subscribing and leaving a review. So until next time, have a great week, and remember, no matter what you're doing, always give 100%, unless you're donating blood.